young men and young women, and welcome to the Rolling Mall, the Leicester Tigers fans podcast and Dad's Army. Here, just a bunch of old men like the backline that stepped out for Leicester Tigers at Welford Road. Mate, they looked pretty sprightly, didn't they, Elliot?
During the war.
Yeah, back in the day. But they look pretty good. They look pretty sprightly. And I think they shoved a lot of words down people's throats.
Yeah, our golden oldies. Yeah, I thought it was brilliant. I thought it was rolling back the years. It was good fun.
Do you want to know what's really impressive? It's that the third team backline that I was part of at the weekend had a lower average age than the Leicester Tigers Premiership backline that went out. I mean, that was pretty spectacular. I'm 36, and I was, I'd say, probably in the middle of the age bracket, but we figured it all out and we still actually came out at about sort of like an average age of 32. And I think Tigers' average age was 33, was it?
I quite liked that Andre Pollard was a mere youngster at 29.
Yes.
Youngest at 29.
Young whippersnapper.
Harry Potter there at 25. Does that make Harry Potter Pike?
Yeah, he definitely was Pike.
Don't tell him your name, Pike.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, some of his handling in the second half as well was very Pike-like, I would suggest.
Imagine if after winning a knock-on, someone comes in and goes, stupid boy.
Yeah, probably did. Aside from that, mate, how was your weekend? All good?
Yeah, it was good, thank you, mate. Bit of a quiet one, which was good. And Tigers on the Sunday, obviously, a highlight. So, yeah, all good, thank you. How was yours?
Yes, not bad. I was, after what I thought was quite a good performance in my last game, I was demoted to the bench for the third team this week. Although that is because I just don't show up to training, so that's fair enough. So I only got 30 minutes, but it was a pretty... Sounds bad. It was quite an easy game. Like we won 55-17. And in those games where the other team isn't quite at your level, you never end up playing your best. So we played a bit crap, to be honest. I am claiming an assist off quite a nice backline move. Pulled the ball back inside to our blindside winger, who then broke through about six tackles to score. And I'd pass it to him behind the halfway line. So it's a bit like when, was it Kyle Steyn claims the assist for Van der Merwe's try against England? Similar sort of vibes. I've done absolutely nothing. And he sort of, in fact, it was a bit of a hospital pass, if I'm being completely honest. And he piled through. So, you know, another successful day. And then I had the kids all on Sunday whilst Beth went on a spa day. And, you know, as a treat, they all got to sit down and watch the Tigers with me, which was pretty, by the end, was not a particularly calm environment, I will admit.
Oh, but I presume your not yet 12-month-old daughter was screaming at the referee to blow up, was she?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, she was particularly hot on the lack of forward passes that were being called.
Every time, sir. She's not said a word. She can't say a word.
Her first words every time. Be doing it all day, ref. Mate, the atmosphere sounded really good on the telly. Sounded really good.
Yeah, very was. I think it always helps when you've got a team like Saracens come to town. I mean, you know, Sarri's great club, great team. It feels a good, it's always going to lean itself towards a good atmosphere, especially with the importance of the fixture in terms of, you know, we are now in sort of knockout rugby stages. So I think there was a lot of, obviously, excitement pre-game. Then obviously the way Tigers played in the first half gets everyone going. But no, I thought the atmosphere was spectacular.
Goal line defence does it though. I think as a stadium, I think we love a bit of goal line defence. The loudest I've ever heard the stadium was that South Africa game midweek. And when in the last sort of 5-10 minutes, we were defending our own line, this young lad called Dan Cole had come off the bench, along with Lottie Takiri. That was quite good fun. But, you know, that was proper on your own line. It's brilliant. I think it was Ian McGeachan in the 97 Lions video who said, it's one of his lesser known speeches, but it's actually my favourite. It says, you'll have a look when you're effectively, when you're on your own line and you're putting everything in and you almost, it's not about systems anymore. It's just about get up, hit. It's my favourite part of the game now, just because you kind of lose yourself in this sort of slight red mist. And at the end, you can look at each other in the eye and say, yeah, like we earned that. And that's the bit I think as fans, we really love at Welford Road.
No, definitely. There's a great interview between Big Jim Hamilton and David Flatman from the summer on YouTube. And I urge everyone to have a look at it because they cover a wide range of subjects, but and it's a good one. It's interesting with Flatman, and he said, actually, rugby, and what he loves about rugby is it's the closest thing to being in the military you will ever get in terms of putting your body on the line, and there is a very real possibility you'll get hurt, but you do it and you put, and there is a trust of your fellow man, you know, you put your trust in them to look after you and you look after them, sort of thing. He said that's what he loved about it, in that blood, guts and, you know, heart and determination and stuff like that. And I watched the game back and it was quite, the thing I took from it, especially on that goal line defence, when it was just desperate with 5 minutes to go, what I loved about it was the realisation is that's probably our season. And the boys probably, whether they knew it or not, battled and fought to save their season, to go, if we let a try through now, that's us done. You know, that's probably our season kaput. And what I loved about it is they had something to play for, and they defended as though they had something to play for. And like you say, it is inspiring when, you know, for the crowd, like you say, you feed your energy off that. When you see, you know, lads diving into tackles and throwing themselves into it. I mean, Andre Pollard is our marquee player and marquee 10. And that sometimes means fancy Dan, he's not too interested. He's here for a paycheck. He was the only back in the top five tackle makers. And on the try line, he was there.
He did three try savers in about 30 seconds. It was astonishing. And they were big shots as well. The read on Lazowski. Oh, we're kind of going into the match review, but the read on Lazowski, when I, for all money, thought he's in. Yeah. And he hits him down so hard, then springs up and then hits good about five seconds in the same movement later. Absolutely astonishing stuff. We'll move on to that in a minute. In the meantime, we've got quite a good little show. We're going to obviously chat about the Saracens result. We've then got to look forward to what I think is going to be a really tricky game against London Irish away. They're in a nice hot streak of form. They don't have too many international call-ups. We're going to talk about open side flankers for the Ultimate 15. And we will have a Leicester Tigers player on the podcast. I can't tell you who, not because I'm being mysterious, because I don't know, because Bondo hasn't let me know yet. But he says that we will be having someone on. And unfortunately, it will just be me speaking to him because Elliot's not about tomorrow. So if you listen purely because of Elliot, you might as well switch off and skip that bit now.
I wouldn't say that, because you'll ask actual proper questions.
No, I'll still message you and ask you what I should ask. I'll ask them and pretend that it's my own incisive journalism that's going in. There's the way. I am going to do one shout out, and it's to me. For those of you who don't know on Twitter or perhaps didn't pay attention, it's now finally been confirmed the kickoff time on the 6th of May for the final home game against Harlequins, same day as the coronation. I've signed up to do a Tough Mudder. I think it's about 8 a.m. in the morning, so I'm going to be down proper early to do it. It's 15 kilometres, barbed wire, electrical shocks, icy water, mud, and general humiliation is on the cards. 15 kilometres, and I've not run that far for about 6-7 years, so, certainly since before I had kids. So started building up to it. It's all to raise money for the 4Ed Foundation. Obviously, Ed Slater suffering with motor neurone disease, and it's to raise money for him, his family, and promote awareness and fundraising for the MND community as well. So I'd like to think it's a really good cause. And if everybody who listened gave a quid, I'd have 1,500 quid to raise for this. Now, I know that's not how it works realistically. I know it's all difficult for everyone, but if you could possibly find it in your hearts, or more importantly, in your wallets, to donate a quid or two, whatever you can spare, no matter how little would be, anything would be fantastic. Please do so. The link to my fundraising page is on the pinned tweet at the top of our Twitter page. So you can just search for it, Rolling Mall on Twitter, and you'll find the link on there as well. It gets a bit complicated if you try and search for my Just Giving page specifically online. But anyway, after that, I'll be coming straight up and we'll be going to the Harlequins game. And to be honest, it'll be quite touch and go if I have time to get changed.
I quite like the fact you'll probably turn up on the terrace, caked in mud. You should definitely take your boots with you, because then it'll make you look... see if you can just sneak onto the pitch.
It would make me look even more keen than I usually am to kind of get on and embarrass myself.
I'll buy you a scrum cap.
Well, I can give you a training update, by the way, how it's gone.
Go for it.
I attempted my first 5K in about 2 years last Thursday night. Stacked it, fell over and sprained my hand. So running during the night, when I can't see where I'm putting my stupid clown feet, that's not for me.
That was on your driveway as well.
Exactly. Oh, well, better go home and have a pint.
Oh, yeah. To the bar, to the pub.
Never mind. Brilliant. If you like listening to us, thank you very much for all your support so far. Please leave us a rating or a review on Spotify or on particularly on Apple. That's one that really helps us. If you want to get in touch, our Twitter handle is @RollingMallPod and our email address is therollingmall@outlook.com. Before we crack on, a quick thank you to our sponsors, St. Martin's Coffee Roasters, who are helping us put this all together. St. Martin's Coffee Roasters are a small team of coffee professionals, proudly born and bred in Leicester. Family owned and operated, they've been dedicated to perfecting the art of coffee roasting for the past 10 years, solely focused on sourcing, roasting, and supplying some of the world's best specialty coffee to their customers across Leicestershire and the UK. They're passionate Tigers fans, and St. Martin's have long-standing connections with the club and are proud to help caffeinate the players and staff in their efforts on and off the pitch. In an effort to help the fans wake up on match days, St. Martin's Coffee Roasters are offering 20% off all coffee when listeners use the code ROLLINGMALL, that's all one word, on their website. So visit stmartinscoffee.co.uk to stock up on locally roasted specialty coffee and use the code ROLLINGMALL, all one word, to save 20% off your next purchase. Okay, lots of news to get through, including what I assume is going to be an equally excellent rundown of the Leicester financing cash injection issue. Elliot, you did a phenomenal piece on that. We'll get to that in a minute. Shall we talk about perhaps the Leicester Tigers women's side first?
Yeah, the exciting stuff. I mean, that
before we talk to the finance guys.
I mean, in terms of the weekend, it's actually, I think, one of the first weekends all season where all three teams won in terms of what we're going to talk about.
If only Leicester City won.
I mean, it was almost a perfect game, wasn't it? Mm. But so, of course, the rugby weekends for Tigers kicked off on Saturday with a trip up to Harrogate, I believe, yes, to take on the Northerners. And it's a close game. We ground out a win.
No, I don't even feel like it feels so bad that I don't want to kind of like actually even like make light of it, because fair play to Harrogate Ladies, but they're obviously playing a team that was just, you know, effectively is Premier 15s ready now.
They are I'm Vicky last week said that she's confident that they're at a level to be competitive at that level. Quite clearly they're starting to show it, and I think that cohesion and that that ability and that familiarity which they're starting to have of being together and as a group is starting to come together pretty nicely, because to win and to win in that that level is just phenomenal, really, and it is absolutely stunning.
Yeah, so the score in the game, because we haven't actually said it, it was Harrogate Ladies 13, beg your pardon, Harrogate Ladies 3, Leicester Tigers 114, which is a ridiculous result. And it's one where, you know, on one side, I think we can say that is absolutely fantastic and just a testament to how well the ladies have progressed. On the other side, you do go and say, well, look, there's just clearly a massive disparity in quality and perhaps, you know, the support and the whilst the ladies' side here is not fully professional at the moment, they do obviously benefit from, I suppose, the wider professional setup at Leicester, if that makes sense.
Yes.
Yeah. So you want to celebrate it, but at the same time, kind of, I suppose, just be... I suppose just to treat it with for what it is, which is, I think, a complete mismatch. But that said, again, I'm so bored of reading Molly Draycott's name now. How many tries did she get? Was it 4 or 5? I think she got
5. I think.
Oh my goodness!
It was amazing. It was absolutely amazing. I mean, the
every week who scored Drakes again? Just Drakes is we're going to call her now.
I know it is good. I think there isn't. I know there's a few people saying, what is there to be gained from it? I think Tigers in certain fixtures now we're having to fulfill fixtures. I mean, it's not.
Yeah,
it's not,
exactly. Yeah,
it's no one's fault.
It's nobody's fault, and we still have to earn the right, because look, if we slip up and lose a game, I still think that we're within sort of catching distance, aren't we? Potentially from Cheltenham.
Cheltenham are bang on our heels. I think they've played a game or two more, so effectively they could capitalise on any slip. So we need to make sure that we do our bits and pieces to maintain it. And look, to be fair, we can only, when we started out, we said this with Vicky last week, no one knows at the start of the season what was possible. This is a learning experience for literally everyone in terms of we don't know this, the league, and we also don't know what where we could get to. I think we're all you know, learning about, and the girls themselves, I think, as well, you know, are learning about what is possible, and they're putting a new ceiling on each week about what is possible. And it's great, yeah, because actually they're testing themselves each week to go, what can we do to be better? And they're on a journey as well to get to the best they can be. And, you know, within a year, what's brilliant about this whole thing is that within 9 months of this group coming together, they are producing this level of quality on a consistent basis. And like you say, I think we are now at a level where we could go to a Premier 15s opposition and be competitive. You know, if you look again, go, what can we do in another 12 months? And it is really exciting to think, you know, with another 12 months and all the things, you know, with all the systems that are in place, again, the journey is fantastic. And it, you know, the levels we could reach is brilliant. So just keep it going.
Absolutely. And they weren't the only ones to come up trumps at the weekend. We also had the Leicester Tigers Academy. They have that finals day, don't they? It's always slightly strange because I think Tigers only lost one game in their respective league in the Academy. But anyway, they end up not being able to compete for the top prize. So they played Bristol for third place. It sounded like a good game, 19-14. Sam Williams, number 8, with a hat-trick. I haven't had a chance to watch the game back yet, but I'm told that that is quite a sight to see, so I'm looking forward to seeing that. And again, just like the big boys, it was goal line defence at the end that kept Bristol out and got the win. So it's nice to see that never-say-die attitude, that goal line resistance filtering down through the sides.
No, absolutely, and it's these traits that, if you and the culture that you get in at a young age, it means when you get to first-team level, you're already there, and it's not a shock to the system to be put under that pressure. And to be fair to the guys in the academy, they treat the lads who come through the system as if they are first team players, which is probably why we get so many coming through. The one thing I would say is having a look at the academy, and we say it every year, that kit, the lighter green, is an absolute beauty.
I was about to say to you, one thing I'm always happy when the academy season finishes is that you're not getting the flood of comments on Facebook or any sort of Twitter post where they go and say, oh, the Academy won. And people go, oh, where can I buy the kit? You can't. We've already asked. It's not there. It's annoying. They're not going to listen to us. So I think that battle has been lost.
It is an absolute beauty. I do have to say, I mean, the samurai version of where they do it as a professional level shirt, it is staggeringly good. And I think the away one is a nod to the original shirt as well, because it's a yellow and
The yellow and sort of crimson.
Yeah. Crimson's a great description. I was trying to choose the colour from the palette, and it is those two shirts are absolute beauties. And it would be interesting to see what clearly the club, they have the reasons for not doing it, but there is a pretty large contingency of people who would want that at first team level, I've got to be honest.
So yeah, no, I agree, and I think I'd be one of them. I think that the green and red hues now that are officially our senior team's colours are slightly different now. They were slightly lighter, weren't they? I suppose perhaps in the amateur era, that's reflected in the academy kit. But I'd still be happy with that design with, you know, slightly darker green and darker red. And I still think that would look pretty banging. And yeah, very, very excited if they ever release that. That would be a very much a take my money and irritate my wife because that should be spent on the kids moment, but there we go. Let's just have a quick chat about head coaches. Nothing announced yet, but Tarquin gets in touch again and he wants us to talk about Simon Middleton.
Good morning, chaps. Tarquin again from Colne. A head coach. I want to have a quick chat. I think Simon Middleton is an outside bet. Done a great job with the Red Roses. He has Deeks on his side. And also, I don't know if you've noticed, his coaches seem to be retiring at the end of the Six Nations as well. Is it an outside chance of Simon Middleton, ex-Red Roses England coach, taking over at Tigers? Cheers.
Well, you said it, Tarquin. I think the word is outside bet is how I would have it. I don't think he's completely off the radar, but I think it would be a very, very big risk. We said it in one of our previous podcasts, didn't we? And my view on it is that he's clearly had a fantastic spell with the Red Roses. you know, leading them to be the best side in the world and that massive unbeaten streak that they went on. That's the positive side of it. If I'm putting on my cynical side, this is probably is not going to make me many friends, but I would say that that winning streak was against largely amateur sides. I know they did beat France and New Zealand several times in that streak, but obviously the vast majority of those bulk sides were against, you know, Wales and Scotland sides that just are not anywhere near the professional level England women are. He himself used the words, "I will be judged on the World Cup," and they didn't win it. And I know that, again, there's stuff about that. I thought, you know, they had the red card, obviously, early on. But actually, the way they played in that World Cup, they were too reliant on their maul, I thought, and I thought they never really clicked particularly out wide. And the bottom line is that women's rugby and men's rugby are very, very different. I'm not saying one's better than the other at all. It's just that you've got men's rugby, which is much more focused on the collisions, women's rugby, which is a lot more focused actually on your technical ability and your ability to get wide and outside players rather than actually sort of having to create that space first by winning the collisions. So there's different focuses, and he hasn't been in men's rugby for about 14 years. I don't think, I might be wrong on that, I'll have to double check, but I think since around 2010 was when he was last involved in men's rugby. So for me, he would be someone I'd definitely support, but he'd be a massive risk.
I think that I agree with all of that. I think the other point to sort of mention is that I think at this point, if he was going to be the head coach, I think we'd have seen a link to us by now. He isn't linked, or hasn't, I haven't seen anywhere linking him to us from a credible source. So I imagine he is probably on the radar. In terms of, is it on the actual working shortlist? I don't imagine he probably is at this stage. I think we've narrowed it down, but I think we've probably worked. If it's not been made already, and I have a sneaky suspicion it probably has been made, if it hasn't been, we're probably working on a list of one or two now. It is very much final stage interviews.
I think that's right. And I think that you'd be within your rights to share your reasoning for thinking why it is probably a done deal now. And it all comes down to your match program nausing. It's finally paid off.
Well, yes, buy the program each week. Has got it.
You even made me buy it to you once when you couldn't go.
Hey, put it this way, cash flow into the club. So we by buying the program, I am saving the club single handedly.
The word hero is overused these days.
Yes, I know. I don't throw it around when I describe myself that often. The program looks actually very interesting in terms of Andrea's column, in terms of what she writes. And the words that she uses would indicate that they have made a decision and they've got fair man. So, yes, I've got a photo of it. So I'll tweet it from our account. So if you didn't read by the program at the weekend, I'll tweet it out so that you can have a read of it as well. And you may not come to the same conclusions we did, but we both had a read of that and both felt that a decision probably now has been made.
Yeah, I think that's it. I think if they had the confidence to say that, we can expect an announcement very soon. It also might explain why I'm not able to speak to Andrea this week, as I asked Bondi to see if we could have a chat with her, and he said, she's not available this week. So who knows? We could be completely scuppered again by the club, who go and release massive bombshell news on a head coach an hour or two after we release the podcast. We will see. Now, Elliot, I'm going to throw it over to you. I'm going to give you 5 minutes for finances. How does that sound?
I will try my best to sound coherent, competent, and able to describe what's going on.
Yeah. So let's lay the background first. So it was announced last week that effectively two shareholders, which is Peter Tom and
Tom Scott.
Tom Scott, thank you very much. It was all the Toms there. And Tom Scott will be effectively executing a share purchase, which could be of value up to £13 million. I believe that there's some nuances about that, which I'll hand over to you. The circular that went round, that has obviously now been pretty public. The insinuation was effectively that recent events have led us with a short to medium-term cash flow issue, which is so severe that effectively this doesn't go through. One of the options that we will have to seriously consider is calling in the administrators. Now, if that doesn't put the willies up, I don't know what will. But Elliot, you're going to explain, because you did a fantastic article. We retweeted it on our account. Anyway, you must read it. It's so, so well done and articulate. So well done for that. But see if you can match it now with doing it verbally.
Thank you very much. It's very kind of you. So, yeah, effectively, the situation is as what Mike has described in terms of Tigers are facing a squeeze on their finances and specifically around the working capital of the business. And the working capital, or your cash flow, as they're called, is pretty similar sort of things. It's your ability to meet your short-term obligations. So effectively, and it's different to profit and loss. So you can use it for, to use a, an example from your personal scenario. You are paid a wage. Once your bills and all your outgoings, fixed outgoings are done, anything that's left over, your disposable income really is your profit. If you don't get paid by your employers, well, that's your cash flow. Because if you don't have any money in the bank, that's you pretty much snookered. Now, Tigers are going in a pretty similar situation because effectively they use a overdraft to fund the business. Now, that's fairly common, and thousands of businesses up and down the country do this. The £4 million overdraft of HSBC. What the club are saying is in the next 6 weeks, so sometime before the end of Q1 of this year, so the next 6 weeks, they will breach their overdraft. Now, quite clearly, no uplift is coming from the bank, HSBC. So what that effectively means is that Leicester Tigers are going to run out of money in the next 6 weeks if they don't do something. Now, the reasons why that is happening is quite varied. And there's three or four things that have come together that have created the perfect storm for Tigers. Not really any of them are Tigers' fault. So to start with, you've got the cancellation of the fixtures.
Just very quickly before you go into that, it's probably worth saying that the last sort of set of accounts that were released post-COVID, whilst it showed an operating loss, it looked we were in a pretty decent position, certainly compared to others. We look to be coming up out of the trough and with quite a coherent long-term plan. But it's amazing how quickly things can change in the space of about 5 months, if we're being honest.
Yeah, effectively, Tigers have now got a pretty unwelcome double whammy, which in terms of they're a loss-making business and now their cash flow and working capital position is under severe pressure. You know, that's a pretty nasty double whammy you don't want. And Tigers have got both, which obviously isn't great. That tells you under some of the pressures Tigers are under. So firstly, the first sort of major cause for this is the cancellation of the Wasps and Worcester fixtures. And Tigers are pretty unique and both of them were back to back. Now, if you work on the fact that Tigers on a match day get somewhere between 350 to half a million in terms of 350 to £500,000 per game in terms of income and cash going through the books. So Tigers effectively have lost out on somewhere between 700,000 to £1 million. That's come out of the system. That's come out of their cash flow. That's a pretty chunky amount of money that's come out of the system. You then have the energy rates rising. Now, all of us listening to this will understand what's coming from when we look at our monthly bills account that goes out for our gas and electricity. Tigers run both Oval Park and Welford Road. So that's two pretty big sites. And obviously the size of Welford Road and the size of Oval Park, they're quite large sites as well. So if you imagine all the electricity bills and the gas and the heat and all the rest of it that comes with running both of those sites, that's pretty, again, it's a pretty chunky set of amount, especially with the energy prices increase that's coming along. All of us, again, can identify with that. On top of that, and this is the major one here, is the interest rates rising. Tigers have, as I said, Tigers have their cash flow really looked after by their overdraft with HSBC, which is mainly how they cope with their day-to-day obligations. So that's your bills, your wages, your payroll, HMRC stuff. So that's your day-to-day running stuff. On top of that, back in September 2021, they took out a £7.1 million HSBC loan. When that was took out, it was taken out at 2% above Bank of England base rate. At that point in time, Bank of England base rate was 0.1. It is now 4% and recently went up by 0.5% at the start of February. So in a nutshell, in 18 months, a 2.1% loan now stands at 6.1%. So if in effect, it's tripled in 18 months. Now,
Liz Truss, I'm blaming Liz Truss.
Well, I was about to say that all of us, again, if you've got a mortgage, are going to be feeling the pinch, especially if you're remortgaging this year. Now, to put this into context of how painful this is for Tigers, I'll give you an example. If you took out a mortgage at the start of, or at the same time Tigers took out that loan, in September 2021, the chances are your mortgage was at a pretty similar rate to what Tigers did. It would have begun with a 2. May not have been 2.1, but it may have been a smidge higher. So 2.3, 2.4, 2.5. So in a similar sort of territory. If you were to remortgage now, Again, similar to Tigers, you'd be looking at a mortgage rate that's no lower than a 5, and in fact, it probably begins with a 6. Now, if you read the newspapers and the experts and the commentary that comes with all of this, if you were to remortgage a £200,000 mortgage with those sort of rates of high 5s or a 6%, that equates to an extra £200 or £300 extra in your monthly repayments. Now do the same calculations on 7.1 million. And you start to see how big of an ouch Tigers are getting in terms of their extra repayments. Now, all this means is that this has all come together and has created the perfect storm to Tigers. And what that means is that in the next 6 weeks, as I say, if they do not do anything, they are going to run out of cash. And if they run out of cash, the consequence is to call in the administrators. So what are they doing about it? So fire a round of equity buying of new shares. Effectively, new shares have been created and Tom Scott and Peter Tom are going to buy them. And that way, the money gets injected into the club straight away. Now, what will happen is £8.3 million will be injected straight away. And then a further £4.7 million is available from June 2023 onwards if it's needed to. Because it is the club is a PLC, a general meeting has to be called for the other shareholders to approve this. And if you are listening, I cannot say how serious this is. Do vote for this, because this is the cheapest and the most secure form of funding the club has got on the table at this point in time. So if you're a shareholder and you're not sure, please, I beg you, vote for it. There is a general meeting called for the 3rd of March, where hopefully this will get voted through, and that means £8.3 million can go through straight away. The consequence of this is that the shareholdings for both Tom Scott and Peter Tom will go up. So effectively, Tom Scott will go up from 45% where he is up to 59%, and then if the further shares are called upon, that will take him up to 70%. Peter Tom will go from 8% currently to up to 29%, and then if a further amount is released, that will fall back down to 20%, because the 13 million comes from 10 million from Tom Scott and 3 million from Peter Tom. Now, the reasons why the club are doing this is that there is very little alternatives. This is, as I say, the cheapest form of funding available, because it is not a loan, it is equity funding. So it is cash directly into the business. It's secure because effectively, the price has been set of the shares and two people are going to buy them. Now, you could do a general shares issue, and that is a question that could be done. And it is a very valid question. Why hasn't it? However, the danger of doing so or the risk of doing so is that the shares may not go for the price that you're wanted, or the money isn't enough money.
There's a lot of uncertainty around it, and you don't know how many will be picked up as well.
Yeah, so there's a combination of the price not being what you wanted, nor enough shares that you need to be bought are bought, which means less money is generated than what you're looking for. There is also a time pressure. You know, this is a 6 week. At some point in the next 6 weeks, Tigers will run out of money. There's 8.3 million available the day after the general meeting to go back in. So effectively, there is again a time pressure potentially. So neither of these things potentially could happen, but they're variables and they're risks. And given that there is a time pressure here, that is a risk that that has been felt not worthy of doing. Just to clear up some of the jargon as well, there is something called a takeover code that's mentioned. That is purely just because Tom Scott's shareholding would trigger, because it's a PLC, will trigger an obligation to buy the rest of the shares, or an offer to be made to buy out the rest of the shares, because it takes him over 70%. Because Tom Scott does not want to do so, a waiver needs to be issued. A waiver has been issued now. So effectively, it is not a takeover of the club, but it does take his shareholding up from the levels it is up to a 70%. So effectively, at the end of this process, Tom Scott and Peter Tom go from being majority shareholders to being very much majority shareholders. They would own a control of the club. So the reason why they are doing this is obviously one, to issue a cash flow cover in the short term, but it is also a medium term investment into the club, potentially a bit of a longer term investment as well, because £8 million goes in straight away. Just to put that into context, Tigers' revenues are £22 million per year. So effectively, over 30% of Tigers' revenues has now come into the club in terms of revenue. And if it goes up to 13 million, that's about 60-65% of Tiger's revenue that's about to go into the club. So effectively, it allows you to do numerous different things. Now, I don't know what they are specifically going to do with the money, but this is an idea just to give you a flavour of what is potentially or what I would do and probably some of the thinking that's going on. So it will cover just cash flow obligations. Now, no one knows how far over the breach of that overdraft could be. It could be 20 grand. It could be £1 million. Either way, the cash flow is now protected. There is 4 home games in the next 6 weeks. So effectively, the cash position should catch itself back up pretty quickly. So we should be in a better position come end of March. If it was me, I would probably use that initial £8 million or a big chunk of it to take a big chunk out of that £7.1 million HSBC loan. One, to take that down so you've got less debt effectively in the business, but it will also protect your borrowing costs. So it means your borrowing costs will come down, which again means better for your working capital, especially over the long term. And it also affects your bottom line. So effectively, it may over time reduce your losses and it may make your profit and loss look a bit healthier because you're spending less on your repayment costs. The other good news that needs to be considered is that the Bank of England base rate is at 4%. Many people think that's the peak of this interest rates rise. So if you hear again, there's another rise in interest rates, that's bad news for Tigers because their borrowing costs have gone up. But if this is the peak, over the next sort of 12 to 18 months, if the interest rates fall as they should do and they come back down, again, that's good news for Tigers because their borrowing costs and their repayment costs come down with it, which means better news for Tigers than the working capital and their profit and loss. So all of these things are, look, this is pretty serious stuff for Tigers, and it is there in black and white to say, look, administration is a potential thing of all of this. The one thing I'd like to stress is not to undermine the message that's come out. As I said, I urge every shareholder to vote for this because this is the best, most secure, and the cheapest bit of funding that is available. There is no alternative really out there. You know, the alternative lending market, it's more expensive, and there's no guarantee Tigers would be approved. You know, Tigers would be considered high risk. So effectively, it could be more expensive for the club to do so, and it may not be available anyway. But Tigers are a struggling business. They are not a dying business. I think we just need to inject a bit of hope and positivity into the situation. There is a difference between a dying business and a struggling business. Tigers are a struggling business. They are not dying. I think we just need to... There is several things that would need to happen for the club to have to go into administration. But this needs to be said, this is a pretty worrying time for Tigers, and this is a pretty serious time for Tigers, and it needs to be taken seriously. And we have been given a avenue out of a mess. We may not be so lucky next time, or other clubs may not have the option to have very loyal and very supportive majority shareholders who are prepared to put £13 million of their own money into the club.
Yeah, and I just echo the optimism that you can take from this, if you are going to take optimism out of what is a pretty worrying situation, is that the note, the circular that went round made clear that actually, firstly, the money that's being injected in, received from the RFU has been ring-fenced for the head coach. So they're still supporting the rugby side. That's not going to be suffered. That's not going to suffer as a result of this. There's also the references to long-term sustainability plans, which I think were in place before, but this is still to support these. So this isn't a sticking plaster solution. It does provide that facility. It does provide a sticking plaster solution, but at the same time, still allows the club to effectively proceed, hopefully, with projects. Like you've said, for example, with the loan facility or whatnot, it may be. There might be other projects that they want to invest in that are going to help the club return to profit, hopefully at some time in the foreseeable future. So I think that's positive as well. It's not just a lifeboat mechanism.
No, absolutely. And the Tigers are a business that wants to be sustainable and wants to get to a point where it can wash its face and can stand on its own 2 feet. And this is a situation that's been brought around by external factors. It is not a Tigers... I do not believe this to be a mismanagement situation. This is very much external factors coming together, creating a perfect storm, which has created this issue. And obviously that's not great, but we do have, as I say, a way out of this and puts us back onto a firm track over this. There is, it is a worrying time for everyone involved in the club. And it's just a good thing that we've got 13 million available to go in. Just as a point to add is that there is a few bits, there's the two main bits of borrowing which the club has got to worry about. There's the £7.1 million HSBC loan, which I've mentioned, which is currently at 6.1% on the repayments. They have another £6.1 million loan from DCMS, which is Department of Culture, Media and Sports, so effectively government, which will, the repayments on that will start in September of this year. Now, that has got a fixed interest rate of 2.1%, and I believe it is £683,000 per month in terms of repayments that need to be made. That might, I might need to double check that just in terms of the monthly repayments. But either way, there is another £6.1 million loan sitting in the background that will need to be repaying from September onwards. So it's a good idea, really, to clear out some of this expensive loan before you have to get in. The good news is that once you start chipping away at that expensive loan and take a big chunk of it out, the interest rates hopefully should fall. So that should come back into much more manageable. The interest rate on that DCMS loan is fixed at 2%. So effectively, there is no variability on that when Tigers will now have consistency of what they need to repay each month. So effectively, if they can get themselves in a situation where they are debt-free over the next 3 or 4 years, that is a goal that they should be working towards.
Right, well, that's enough about money. Let's go and talk about Leicester Tigers beating Saracens. Nice, comfortable, easy win, 24-18. And there definitely wasn't a mass need for changes of underpants after that one. That was squeaky bum time to the max. That second half was, at the same time, one of the most inspiring but one of the most unpleasant watching experiences I can recall as a Tigers fan.
That's a very nice way, a neat way of putting it. As a neutral, that's probably one of the games of the season in terms of first half, Tigers were brilliant. And that first 40 minutes, if Tigers can bottle that 40 minutes along for the first 20 minutes against Saints and bottle that and ply over 80 minutes, they will take so many teams to the cleaners. And because it was so, so good, that second half, and it's very easy to go, oh, Tigers were rubbish. And there was quite a few points Tigers didn't help themselves. There were a few knock-ons, bad kicks and all the rest of it. But Sarri's played awesome. I mean, that really is, to me, is that the second half, Sarri's came out and played very, very well. And they threw heavy ammunition at us. And like you, I am so proud of the fact that we're on the ropes. But at no point did we ever take the canvas. We never took the knee. We fronted up, everyone to a man, put the body on the line, and defended that try line like it was an absolute must. And it should be. I think it's a great game. It says the last half an hour, not a point was scored.
No, that's it. And do you know what is amazing about that? That second half, well, obviously we didn't score a point. That's fine, because we never even got close to scoring a point. Probably up until the end when we got a penalty when we, perhaps Andre could have kicked it, but there was no need for us. Somebody said, oh, don't let them get a bonus point. They're so far ahead. We don't care about that. And we only lost that half 8-0, one try. And that one try was not from sustained pressure or anything really Saracens did. It was a bit of a gift. It was a loose ball that was picked up by Lewington, and he ran off with it. And I thought that the defence, the physicality and the ferocity from absolutely everybody in the team was absolutely astonishing. We'll get on to sort of obviously giving as many shout-outs as we can. I thought the front row were huge. In fact, the pack as a whole were superb. Joe Hayes, I thought, had his best game.
Yeah,
for me, I thought of the season, I thought he was strong in the scrum. He absolutely hammered people. Martin and Henderson in the second row, they put down, I would say, a statement performance for them being starting second row, because they had everything. They had power, athleticism, particularly from Henderson. George Martin, I put up a tweet about it. My goodness, the most aesthetically pleasing tackler in the league, and absolutely devastating. Sit down, Billy. What, absolutely lovely. I think you text me back, say, yeah, thanks for coming, Billy. It was absolutely marvellous to watch. And then, of course, the back row did a fantastic job, in particular Jasper. But on the defence side, the backs were not shying away from this at all. Talk about our halfbacks very quickly, because Andre Pollard, 3 try savers in about 30 seconds, which we discussed earlier. Ben Young's got a lot of stick for his second half performance. I was particularly annoyed by some of his second half kicks. So I put up another tweet saying how imperious he looked in the first half. And then all these people come jumping in, not realizing at the time I posted it, it was true. But obviously his kicking game went to shit, which it did, there's no point denying it. But his defense will go overlooked. But there was a particular point, probably right in front of you if you were stood where you usually are, when Saracens had a maul, they pulled it infield, and they were very slowly just behind, creeping, getting ready to flood the blind side. And Lenny, don't know how he sees it, but from where he stood, he spots it and he pulls Potter back across his way so he can cover the way. And Tompkins at the same time gets it, expecting there to be a gap or Lenny to bite in so he can pass. And instead, they're fully marked up. And Potter actually smokes Tompkins up in front of the terrace. You know, that is world-class defensive organisation from Lenny. And he will not get credit for it because it's not the sniping stuff that he was doing. But, yeah, just that defensive display. I mentioned it in the intro. The get up, hit. That's what gets the goosebumps going. That's what gets the crowd. The noise on, I think, was it Montoya's turnover? After Pollard's, you know, sort of double, triple tackle, when it looked like they were going to score, and Lenny just sort of like scrambles it clear. The noise after that was just, you know, imagine that you're defending. You must feel like you could take on anything then.
I'd like to do a shout out and linked into that with the midfield. So actually, Pollard, Gopeth, and Matt Scott, in terms of hitting Saris on phase one ball, stopping them at source, that allowed, effectively, it stopped the momentum almost, and it allowed on phases two, three, and four, when Saris are wrapping around with the forwards, it meant that they were running into our heavy mob. You know, they were running into our heavy traffic. So the likes of Henderson, Martin, Jasper, Montoya, they're meeting them there. That's where, again, we absolutely smoke them.
Absolutely. And I want to go and quickly throw it over to Dan Gadsby, who sent in his voice note. He wants to talk about Mr. Pollard.
Hello, lads. Love the pod. Just wanted to comment on how good Andre Pollard was running that double line in attack. With some hit bigger, harder runners up front and then and out the backs and the speedy men behind. We've seen a few games now, and I think it's excellent to see running rugby from Tigers.
Thanks a lot, Dan. I think we agree. You know, he's obviously had a difficult start to his life at Tigers. He was injured, and then when he came back, he's not really fit. And there is something about his presence on the pitch, though, that make us instantly look like a better side, even if sometimes what he does doesn't come off all the time. There are a couple of, you know, sort of crap attacking kicks, you know, which is currently in vogue apparently in this country for some reason. There was, I think, actually for Mike Brown's try, it was a lovely fizz pass, but it didn't go to hand. It had to bounce up. So, you know, but his ambition and his organisation of the attacking line is fantastic, isn't it?
I really like watching Andre Pollard play for us. I think he's finding his feet, and I think he's starting to hit his straps. And what I love about
I agree.
Pollard is the, as we said earlier, his willingness to get involved in the physicality stuff. You know, he's not, it is quite easy for us to have signed a fancy Dan 10 who doesn't want to get involved in that stuff. But the fact he's getting involved in it.
It's so less than a fancy Dan 10. Yuck. Absolutely. Oh, give me a fly off who fucking smokes people instead.
Yeah, I know. It's so less than. But in terms of just like, I think it's a character thing more than anything, because in terms of buying into the spirit and the culture of what this club's all about and the body on the line sort of stuff, for Pollard to be doing that, to me, is a massive thing, because it means he's fully connected into the group and he's fully involved in it. And his range of passing, to me, is an absolute pleasure. And I actually want to say, for the first time in a while, actually the first time all season, but we've had a 10 and 12 double pivot that's worked. It's the first time where that combination has actually worked. It didn't work with Freddie and Jimmy. For whatever reason, it just didn't work. This time, this week, having Jimmy and Andre in the midfield, it worked. And it's just, for whatever reason, that combination worked a lot, lot better. But I think it allowed us to play with a bit more freedom, and I actually thought we'd play some really good rugby. And, you know, that's really what you want to be seeing from Leicester. Me and you have always said we want Leicester to expand their game a little bit and want to play a bit more rugby. That doesn't mean it's like Harlem Globetrotters throwing the ball around. What it means is stuff like what we're doing in the first half with Lenny. You know, sniping at the fringes, off getting an offloading game. You know, keep the ball alive, keep an offloading game going. Simple pop passes between forwards, get over the gain line and create the space. Now, just by having a simple offload, it allowed us to create a load of space and score some tries. You know, and not just in amongst the forwards, out the backs. You know, Mike Brown's try, and we'll talk about Mike. I think it's a nice way to talk about Mike Brown. But actually, the interchange between, I think it was Jimmy out to Ashton, back into Mike Brown to run through. It's brilliant. It's quick passes, pop passes, draw your man, pop it, in you go, try tight. And it's simple things like that where for the last 18 months, we have been a bit too conservative on this. And one of the things over the next sort of few years, I really want us to start building on this and just to go, again, I'm not asking for Harlem Globetrotters, but I am asking for offloads and running on a people's shoulder and be an avenue to pop a pass up.
Yeah, absolutely. People think that if you want ambition, it has to be flung wide. It's not the case at all. For me, it's about playing at speed. It's about recycling quickly, getting over the gay line, and then just trying to play quickly before a defence can set. And you don't have to fling it wide. You can do what actually we did, which is attack the fringes. And it's brilliant to watch when it works. And Lenny is so good at it when he does it. And in the first half, that was prime Ben Youngs to a point where I'd say he does that better than anyone, arguably in world rugby, when he is on it, picking up, his eyes darting left and right. A fringe defender has not got a chance because whichever way you go, he's going to put the ball somewhere else into space. And he was doing that. And, you know, Henderson's try, Pollard's try, all off him sniping, taking offloads, popping it out the back, pulling it back inside, varying it up. He was so good. I cannot emphasize how good he was in that first half and how important he was to play. Now, I heard a few people say, oh, he got an armchair ride. And yes, but actually that again chimes into how we were playing, which is actually what was nice was we had the double pivot, but actually we had a lot of heavy rudders in midfield. So, you know, Scotty's a great player. He hits nice lines, but he doesn't perhaps make too many yards in traffic, it would probably be fair to say, with a very heavy sort of back five, really, who are all decent carriers. We had those guys dotted about the park, constantly offering that short ball off Gopeth. And it gave him a little bit of time to be able to either pick a short line or pull it out the back, and we could try and sweep around the outside of guys. And it was nice that you had these heavy runner options everywhere. In the first half, Saracens couldn't handle it. And that's why I know you want to talk about Mike Brown. I kind of want to save him to the last, but that first try, let's talk about that, because Mike Brown might be the most frustrated person in Welford Road as he sort of follows Visa all the way around. But Visa goes through, off a ball off Jimmy. Tompkins misreads it because he thinks it's going out the back. And instead, Visa charges straight through, beats about six players and half of the Saracen side, and eventually gets recycled. And Hartrey goes over for, I think, his first try at Welford Road anyway. Visa, fucking hell, what an absolute monster he was. I know Brown got man of the match. Jasper, for me, was my man of the match. I thought he was absolutely sensational.
Big game, needs big players, and boy, did our big players stand up. You know, Visa, Montoya, in terms of the pack, they're the world class.
The Emperor with that turnover still. I mean, and the guttural roar afterwards. It was like, yeah, exactly. It was generally, it was like something out of Gladiator. Are you not entertained?
What he just needs to do is hold the ball like that and just turn to the crowd, turn to the terrace.
Do it.
And I think every man would just go weak at the knees for him. No, look, Jasper, in terms of Jasper, that was absolutely magnificent in terms of just taking on and just barreling people and just smoking people. What was great about Sunday was he scores that try, and if he just rolled a little bit, he scores it himself. But, you know, we recycle it well.
It's smart, though, because actually, if he goes another roll, you could say it's momentum, but the way refs have been recently,
they're tight on it.
And it's Tom fucking Foley as well. He definitely have pinged it. So he was really good. I'll tell you what you noticed from that, though. It's Jasper's speed. It's not, people talk about his raw power in traffic, but his acceleration and his pickup speed, I think, is the best in the league out of any number eight. He does second, you know, effectively he steps him and then accelerates out of the tackle. It's just, he's a phenomenal athlete.
It is funny that he basically looked at Mike Brown and went, no. And just went, see you later, and just went in the opposite direction. this is before Mike Brown had got himself into the game. And it was quite funny why I just went, he's clean. He didn't rate his legs. But it was very, very funny.
Maybe it's like when that new guy joins your team and you're like, no, I don't even know if he could catch it, mate. I'm not passing you the ball.
Yeah, you've got feet for hands or something. No, see you later. But what was great about that is he scores that try. And then 30 seconds later, the ball's kicked to him on the kickoff and he goes charging up the touchline. I thought he was about to go to... Mm. At one point, I for half a second, I was like, Oh, he's going to do it again. But that, to me, Sunday's performance, sorry, reminded me of Jasper when he first joined the club in terms of that raw just power and velocity of getting through it. But what you're seeing with Jasper now compared to 2 years ago is that he doesn't do any of the silly stuff now. It is all rugby. It is all, what do I need to do for my team? And it is, my role is to basically smoke opposition when I've got the ball in hand and get my side over the carry, over the gain line with my carrier. And he does it so, so well. He just, you know, we've talked about that transition from being a bit of a nuisance in a bad way to being an all-round superstar. And, you know, he is now one of our most important players, and it is, world-class does get banded around a bit. I think he's hitting those levels. Like, it is absolutely staggering, the game. He's that level of performance he's bringing. He's now X Factor, and it's dynamite.
Yeah, absolutely phenomenal performance. And it's his work rate as well. You know, he doesn't just show up and do the show pony, oh, I'm going to do a big carry. You know, like Chabal used to do. Everyone used to look at a Chabal highlights reel. But I said, well, watch him in most games, and he'll be missing for 70 of those minutes. Not Jasper. You cannot keep him out of the game. Massive in that defensive effort. He's on for the full 80 as well, I think, wasn't he?
Those chop tackles. Absolutely just taking guys out.
Yeah, like absolutely superb tackle technique. And he's doing it really carefully, really legally. And it was the fact, so carefully, perhaps might be overdoing it slightly, but there was one, I think, once when Billy Vunipola got flipped onto his head from one of his tackles. So perhaps that's not quite the right term. But look, I think he made 23 carries, which I think was a game high. And I think that he made 17 or 16 tackles or something along those lines. That is an astonishing work rate for number eight, and just shows how important he is. Now, the next try, I'd say we've spoken about how good Lenny was, and let's go and talk a bit about Mike Brown as well, because obviously the second and third try were all about him, really. The second try, he creates this mazy run, which actually came from, I think, Lenny's first bad kick of the day. Again, an annoying attacking kick, just sort of booted over, goes to Shegan, who then puts in, thankfully, an even worse kick, just straight down the middle. But how good is it to see Brown? The first thing he did was, he's like, you can see he grimaces, and you can tell he's just going to have a run back as hard as he can, and boy, did he impress. I think he went straight through Billy as well, Billy Vunipola.
I thought Mike Brown was absolutely brilliant.
Best debut, I'm going to put it out there, best debut, since Jasper's first game for us.
Yeah, that's probably about right. I can't think of many debuts that are better. I mean, Ashton's was memorable because he got sent, he got yellow card.
Try saving tackle and then a yellow card.
Yeah, without touching the ball, which was brilliant. I think Mike Brown was superb in terms of that. I thought his ability under the high ball, I thought, was fantastic. And again, you talk about Freddie Stewart being world-class. It's easy to forget that Mike Brown was considered the best in the business for 10 years at doing that. You know, hoist the ball up, Mike Brown gets it. You know, that, to be fair, when you think about when Freddie was first coming through, that was who I was measuring Freddie against. And Freddie was knocking it out of the park.
Well, that's what we were saying on this podcast. A lot of people were like comparing him to various people. We said the most recent thing is, and Mike Brown, people, I think unfairly, you mentioned Mike Brown, people go, he was fantastic, you know, in his prime Harlequin stage. He was unbelievable. And that ability to be so secure at the back end of the high ball, the ability to beat the first defender pretty much every time. That stuff Freddie's getting really good at. And it's stuff Mike Brown apparently is still really good at 37. I think there are a few people who raised an eyebrow at it, the signing, you know, perhaps with some justification, because he wasn't very good at Newcastle, to be honest. But as you say, absolutely phenomenal. But his work rate in open play was just fantastic to see, wasn't it?
Oh, it was all-round game, all-round fullback play, I thought was fantastic. And my friend Tom Ludden made two very interesting points about Mike Brown. I'd like to share them with the group, just so everyone else can sort of have a feel for it as well. But he said that actually moving forward, you could make a very strong case to actually have a back three of Mike Brown at fullback, Freddie Stewart on the wing, and Anthony Watson on the other wing. Because effectively, no team's going to kick it back to Leicester at that point. You know, because why would you? Because all three are so secure under the high ball, you're just booting the ball away. You're not doing anything. It's nothing to be gained from it. And then that allows actually the opposition to have to play into the midfield where you're hitting Tigers' defensive efforts. So again, you're effectively part of a strangulation of that Tigers could impose on the team is by cutting off the backfield, bringing them into the near field and go, right, you've got to run into Martin, Visa and Henderson and Cracknell. You know,
no thanks.
Yeah, and Montoya, come out of that one. So again, yuck. you're effectively front and back, you're effectively covered. And the other second interesting point that my friend Tom made, I think it's really fascinating as well, actually. He said maybe part of the problem that Mike Brown had at both Quinns and at Newcastle is that no one around him took the game as seriously as Mike Brown. You know, no one is as intense around him as what Mike Brown is. He's a very intense character. He's very Marmite in terms of he's so intense and what his intensity is. He comes to Tigers where that intensity and that graft and that just almost obsession with it is almost like, well, that's normal, mate. You know, welcome to the group. And I always think that actually a club like Leicester and the culture of grafting and no show ponies, and it's all about the work that you do and the work hard on the obsession of being better. Stuff like that, you know, we had it with Ashton. He loves it. Wiggy came in as a player. He loved it. You know, we've now got Mike Brown coming in. Quite clearly, he's enjoying the environment he finds himself in. And, you know, we talk about the golden oldies and stuff like that. If you're buying players at the end of the contract who are just seeing out a retirement package and don't bring a good attitude with them, they're not good signings, quite clearly. But if you bring in good pros who have a good attitude that want to be there and actually are dedicated to their work and their craft and what they want to do and be better, it makes the group so, so much better. And we've got so lucky with our golden oldies because they're all of them of that ilk in terms of we want to be better, we want to contribute, we want to get better and be part of this thing that Leicester are doing. And it shines off because actually the rest of the group is very, very young. And you've got lads coming in who are 37, 38, who are as big a grafters as the youngsters. It gives you, again, just so much experience and so much knowledge and so much know-how. Maybe it could have been the 1% or 2% difference that got us over the line on Sunday.
I completely agree. I think it's a really good point by your mate Tom. I think maybe Mike Brown wasted his career at Harlequin, so he only got 70-odd England caps, so perhaps he didn't. But it certainly feels like a good fit. And you say those characters, the guys who are so ultra-competitive. One of my favourite understated moments of the game was where they'd knocked the ball on close to the line, and Chris Ashton gets in and gives Billy Vodopola a bit of a smile. And bearing in mind the noise that, sorry, I know that maybe some Saracens fans might listen to this, and every team does it, but no team makes as much noise at minor events like a knock-on from the opposition and the gloating like Saracens do. It's absolutely ridiculous. And when they knocked on and Ashton comes over with a grin and pats Billy and he shrugs it off, I loved that. I absolutely loved it. The point he says, you know, you can dish it out a bit, can't you, Billy? But you don't like it. They don't like it up them. And I thought that was cracking. Did you? But it was on the other side of the pitch, did you? But did you see
I
that
saw
on
it on the replay. I did see it. And it is so, so funny. He's got
such a punchable face acting as well.
I know.
Fair play, Billy Vodopola, for holding it back. Because I should say, Vodopola, second half, he was immense. He was fantastic. Had a great
game.
He was.
Yeah, I don't have an issue with the Saris thing because, you know, all teams do it. It is very, very funny, however, when the tables are turned and you can dish it back out because it is very, very funny.
Yeah, I suppose I need to clarify it by saying it annoys me, but in that sense, it's working. Because that's why they do it. It's to get under your opponent's skin a bit. And therefore, in one sense, I kind of applaud it. At the same time, I hate it. So
yeah, it's good fun, isn't it?
That's what I think. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I personally don't want to see Tigers doing it too much. But then again, I have seen us do it. And I do scream like an idiot if we win a scrum penalty. So I suppose I'm a massive hypocrite, basically. But yeah, Mike Brown. Oh, the interview afterwards as well.
Powerful stuff, weren't
it? Powerful stuff. And it just shows why he's playing. He's not here to, oh, I'll actually kind of I want to go and upgrade the car or whatever it is like that. Actually, I the DFS have got a sale on. I want to go and get a couple of new nice sofas. But instead, he's here because he loves the game and he feels he's still got a lot to give. And he's obviously that, I suspect he's probably, I think he would admit he's quite a difficult person when he's not able to do what he wants to do. I bet he's so frustrated and it felt like a big release of that frustration. And just on that try that he scored, you saw that release, you know, the huge fist pump, the big grin out. But the try build-up, firstly, yeah, Harry Potter did definitely have a foot in touch, but Foley then worked his best to try and even it out in the second half. I thought it was appalling. But the interplay, firstly with the forwards building it, then the pass from Pollard, and then the interplay between Gopeth, Ashton and Brown, combined age of 111, those three, was sublime, wasn't it? I mean, that's what experience, I think, brings you.
Experience and skill. you know, you've got, it's one thing to be that old, but you've got to be able to play a bit still to get picked. And, you know, they're doing good shape and they can play a bit, and it helps when you've got it. You know, it's like when Leicester City signed Cambiasso, the bloke was 34, but best player on the pitch at Premiership level, and just absolutely smoked it. So, you know, we've got, they're good players. And
Goppers could be our sort of Cambiasso. He's a similar vibe to him, I think.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe.
Mike Brown looks a bit more like him, though.
Yeah, I was about to say, Mike Brown and Cambiasso are very much off the chalk and cheese. They very much look the same, sorry. But no, look, it's a lovely try, and it's a nice bit of interplay. And it shows that actually when you don't have to need express pace at times in the backs to open up a defence, if you can move the ball around and draw and pass at skill, you can create some space.
Look, we've talked about all the good stuff. I don't want to really dwell on the negative stuff. I'm certainly not going to like pick on certain players. I think we saw players make mistakes in the second half. Everyone made mistakes. I thought perhaps Lenny had some of the high profile ones where his kicking game, which is usually very good off the base, suddenly went to complete toilet. Joe Lunn got in touch just to remind us, by the way, that he had just played 76 or 75 minutes at the time then he was doing it. Maybe he was starting to cramp up or something. That could well have been a factor, perhaps. Like I said, he was monumental in the defensive effort. And I think that's what I want to get across. And Richard Wigglesworth said it after the game, that they didn't play well for 45 minutes. That's probably true. We couldn't hang on to the ball. We made pretty bad decisions with the ball. But that's almost what makes it such a promising display, that there's so much to work on. And there was a template of what we should be doing in that first 30 versus what we shouldn't be doing versus, you know, the rest of the game. But it's all made better by the fact that the defence was our safety blanket. And I think everyone, regardless of the mistakes they made in attack, more than redeemed themselves for the efforts they put in defence. So I'm not too interested in kind of forensically pulling apart the game like we did against against Northampton, where we were poor. Because with this, our defence really stepped up and bailed us out, and they deserve massive credit for that.
I'd also like to say, we kicked for goal. You know, penalty on the halfway line.
Mm.
Lessons have been learnt. You know, in terms of, you would be very, very justified to have booted that into touch to try and get a line out going. But instead, decision was made. We've got Pollard, who can kick from pretty much anywhere, bangs it over for 3 points, and it kept the scoreboard going. So suddenly, it may have been 21-18 under pressure, but actually 24-18, it's a scoreboard moving, and it just gives us a bit of a buffer that actually came in handy towards the end of the game. So again, credit the boys on the pitch for making the right judgment call. And actually, if you take the 80 minutes in terms of the first 40 minutes in terms of the attacking stuff and the second 40 in terms of a defensive, you shall not pass. If you take that into the next six games, we will do some damage over the course of this year, because that is attacking and body on the line determination to hold out. That should, you know, that has to be what this is about. Now we're in knockout rugby now, in my opinion, and that has to be what takes us there.
Very quickly then, to wrap up, that brings me on to a couple more things and questions, not negatives really, but just questions to ask you. Significance of Montoya being captain despite Hanro being in the matchday squad. Wigglesworth underplayed it, saying that Hanro was not fully fit at the start of the week. I'm not sure I buy that.
I personally don't either. It'll be interesting to see what they do next week. As an aside, I thought Montoya captained very, very well, had a good relationship with the referee.
Yep.
And I thought it suited both parties to have that arrangement in terms of Hanro being a senior player, leading by example,
yes,
and Montoya having the captain's armband, being the on-field general.
And the voice.
Yes.
And do you know what? I agree. Because if you looked after the game, Hanro was speaking to the team all around off the pitch. And they were all listening. They were all on Facebook. So it makes me wonder whether or not they're saying, look, or maybe it could be even Hanro that's come up and said, look, actually, the on-field captaincy, I think, is diminishing his actual leadership ability, which is through playing and leading by example, as you've just said, because I thought he was fantastic as well.
Best I've seen him play, actually, for a very long time.
Yeah, I thought he was superb. And he's a fantastic bloke. And it wouldn't surprise me, the character he is, to say, I think it might be best to give the match day armband, if that's the thing, to somebody else, perhaps to Julian. let me focus on leading how I know how to lead, and let me still speak to the boys. You know, like I can do all that stuff, you know, after the game, in the week, it still be a leader. But that sort of the on-field relationship, the referee and the decision-making, leave that to Julian. So I wonder if that's what's happening. Yeah, I agree with you. It will be very interesting to see what happens going forward. Decision at the end to just tap it and kick it out rather than go for the bonus point. I said, what did you think about that? And you messaged back with a very simple explanation.
We were shagged.
I saw it was almost kind of like a look of desperation from the forward. So just fucking boot it out. I am done. I don't want to go into another mall. Who knows? That bonus point might be critical later on, but I can guarantee that won't be the bonus point I'm annoyed at losing. There's been plenty of other ones which will be, I suppose, more to blame if we lose out by a point or two on the playoffs. Very finally, Andre, apparently people have said he took a knock. He obviously was the one to kick it out at the end. He didn't get subbed. Did you notice anything?
Didn't see it, but if others did, that's interesting. It was things to keep an eye out on. I'd imagine with 6 days rest. Certainly on his Instagram today, he was playing golf. So so I'm not sure. I'm not quite sure with his day off. I'm not quite sure that the knee's quite so bad. If in his golf swing looked in fairly good nick.
He's a good looking bloke as well, actually, you know.
He's literally like an all round threat.
I know. I'm just starting to think now. If you've got Pollard, Kelly and Porter in the same, I mean, that I don't think we've had as good a looking back line, to be honest. You don't really know what to say to that. I'm just putting it out there. I just think that it just opens up a whole new demographic for us to appeal to.
All good. Yeah, sounds good to me.
Right, shall we look at some three-word reviews?
Yeah, thank you very much for everyone for getting into touch. It was brilliant to see all the comments and the engagement with it, which was fantastic. First one for me, David Cowell, Bodies Online. Yeah, absolutely. You can say many things about this side, but their commitment and their determination and putting themselves on the line to stop the try was superb and fantastic to watch.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for everyone for getting in touch. It's generally made it very, very difficult to try and pick some of our favourites. I'm going to go to Gigi and Cora, though, for what I thought was a fantastic one, which goes green, red and brown, which basically, I think, summarises the fact that Mike Brown, he's played the majority of rugby against us, winding us up. He's played one game for us, and all of a sudden, it feels like he bleeds Tigers from that display. So fantastic comment, Gigi. Thank you very much. And fantastic display by Mike Brown.
Yeah, he might be a Cockney, but he's now one of us. Always was. Maggie Slaughter put defibrillator definitely needed. Yeah, absolutely. I think all of us were a bit nervous. That final 5-10 minutes, I think all of us were sort of pacing up and down or just rocking in our seats or just downright couldn't watch. So, yeah, that was as... come on, Tigers, let's make it a little bit easier, but it's nice to be on the right side of these close ones rather than the other side.
Yeah, how about growing feeling of dread? I'm sure you did as well.
Yeah.
In that second half. It's, and then you just get a lovely sort of release and a rush when you end up winning it. Go over to John Kaczynski. This is a good one. OAP, which stands for Old Age Perfection. Very, very good indeed. Yeah, that experienced back line. Imagine if we still had Nemani as well. They could really, really have upped the average age there. But that was absolutely fantastic experience. Every single one of them had a great game, in particular, obviously, Brown, and I thought Gopeth as well looked really, really good in the 12 shirt. Final one, I'm going to cheat, sorry, Elliot, and just chuck in one more from Jenny from the block. Don't be fooled by the rocks that she's got. Says,
nice.
Yeah, I know. I'm so hip. Song from 25 years ago, whatever it was. She says, forward passes ignored in capital letters, and then puts in brackets, how many times Tom Foley? We haven't had a moan about Tom Foley. He was minging.
I mean, yeah, we won, so I don't want to bag him, but yeah, it was crap, quite frankly. Hey ho, such is life.
as I mentioned earlier, we're really lucky to be joined by a Leicester Tigers player. Now, Bondi didn't actually tell me who it was going to be until about 2 hours ago. Nick Dolly has very kindly offered to give up his time. Nick, it's great to see you. I would say up and about and on your feet, but you sat down, you look super comfy. How are you doing, mate?
Yeah, all good. Good day of training. But like you say, just sort of on the couch with the normal text on, bit of recovery. Got the dogs here and, yeah, just trying to chill out tonight and ready for tomorrow.
Now, people can't see this, but where are the dogs? Because I'm very much a dog person. And
got one here sleeping and the other one there's sleeping. So got two bulldogs. That seems to be their favourite pastime.
Yeah, it's also my favourite pastime. I'm just with two kids under three, but I'm not allowed to actually partake in it, which is apparently a bit annoying. mate, so obviously the question that you get asked like probably 10 times a day, particularly on match day whilst you're around, is always going to be, oh, how's the injury? How's things going along? But I will ask it, obviously, let's get it out of the way. How is the injury coming along? How's rehab coming along? And yeah, sort of everything on track on that front?
Yeah, like obviously it's fairly serious one. Unfortunately, there's no good timing ever really for injuries. So yeah, it was fairly disappointing, but it's one of those things that are sort of part and parcel of the game. And, you know, the rehab's going well and everything the club's done to support me has been sort of top quality where it comes from, you know, having the best surgeon in Andy Williams, having the best rehab, second set of eyes, being able to go back home and the club set me up with a physio when I went back to Australia, which like, you know, a lot of clubs probably wouldn't do that. So in the respects of, you know, an injury process and a rehab process, you know, I can't really thank the club enough. I want to repay the club by getting back on the field and playing well in a Tigers shirt.
I didn't know that you got to go back to Australia for a good amount of time. Was that for like a decent chunk? Were you able to sort of spend a lot of time with family?
Yeah, like it was sort of a decision that we made post surgery. There was a few little complications and things around flying, but also for me mentally, I wanted to make sure that I could get a bit of a head start. And obviously, you know, the final happened and it was amazing to win. Unfortunately, I wasn't really able to celebrate with the boys, but I think it was the Monday after I was in doing our rehab, doing our day one, and obviously everyone had about 4 or 5 weeks off. So that probably would have been the toughest time, but it was nice when everyone come back in and then obviously, like I said, sort of it got to about the first game and then I got my brace off and I got the all clear to fly as well. So I got back for about, I think it was just over 4 weeks. So yeah, it was nice. A good amount of time and like I say, the club set me up with, you know, masseuse and physios and rehab over there. So it wasn't just a holiday, like it was also able to do a lot to progress. So when I came back, I was in a much better spot than when I first left, both physically and mentally.
I think that's one of the points, isn't it? Because mentally, you're pretty shot when you have an injury as serious as you had. To be able to spend it, I suppose, with sort of family, have that support there would be pretty important. Now, I would go say you were doing some warm weather training, but obviously you'd be going over in the Aussie winter.
Yeah.
My wife's family are in the Central Coast and we went there like last summer and it was like shit throughout. It just rained constantly. But did you manage to get in some like good time while you were there?
Yeah, like it's always a good time going back and seeing people. I hadn't been back in about 2.5 years. So like I hadn't seen my dad for about near enough 2.5 years and all my mates and things like that. So catching up with them, like no matter the weather, really, it was just nice to get back. And yeah, like we did get some good days, but there was also a lot of rain. Yeah, I think they had one of the worst patches of rain, sort of the back end before I came and then a little bit into when I came. But like I said, I'm not going to complain. Like I was able to get back and see the people that I needed to see and do what I needed to do in terms of the training and the rehab. So the weather didn't bother me too much, to be honest.
Did you get beaten up at all about the fact you're now a capped England international?
Nah, like...
You didn't go around wearing the little cap just to wind people up?
No, I think like all the boys and stuff back home are pretty proud. And obviously, you know, they see how hard I've worked and also like the lack of opportunity that I had when I was in Australia. So like coming over here, having a fresh start, and then, you know, being able to pull on the England jersey to represent a country that has sort of given me an opportunity and almost like believed in me is something that I'm very proud of. And obviously having English grandparents and an English mother, there's that heritage as well, which I'm super proud to represent.
Do you have a sort of set time line or set target game perhaps when you're hoping to be back, or are you still very much like saying, look, let's just see how we go week to week?
Yeah, of course we've got targets in terms of where we want to be at certain stages, and I'd say we're definitely on track for what we've said. I'm not going to say too much on that just because we have a few bits of testing and things
of course
that we need to kick off, and obviously I don't want to give a date and then ultimately put pressure on myself, physios and things like that. I think with this injury and sort of my age, we got to be smart around what sort of approach we take, and obviously I want to get back as soon as possible, but there's also the fact that, you know, I'm probably only going to have one shot to come back this season, and I need to make sure that when I come back, I'm able to make a difference to the team and I'm at 100%, because there's no point coming back playing at 80% and let the team down. I need to make sure that I'm, you know, ready to go and ready to play at premiership level.
Anyone who listens to this podcast will hear me bang on about how I've had two knee operations, but one a full reconstruction, one was a bit of a sort of a half-assed job, which meant the first time I played, having only done like half the rehab as well, I got impatient, meant that it went again like pretty much straight away. But my wife was good, his girlfriend at the time was good enough to take a photograph of it actually happening as I was trying to sidestep the fullback, which is less than there, never sidestep. So I sidestep the fullback and it went with nobody touching me. I got snipered, got awarded dick of the day, just to rub salt in the wound. Yours was particularly rough because, of course, not only was it on camera, but then they decided to show it again and again at the ground, looking for foul play. Because it was so rough to look at, have you allowed yourself to look at it again, or do you just like, no, it's that's done, I don't need to see that?
I mean, at the start, like, I think it got to a stage where there was so many people, you know, whether it was here, whether it was family back in Australia, whether it was, you know, people I'd previously played with or, you know, been on camps with England, teammates, whatever it might be, that everyone, the major theme was, oh, no, nah, don't watch it. Like, don't watch it back. It's terrible. So that obviously makes you want to watch it more. Yeah. And so I just went and watched it and I was expecting something like terrible. And I mean, yeah, obviously it doesn't look great. And it's probably one of the better camera angles if you're looking for a knee injury. I watched it a few times. Well, I got one of the physios to send it to me and I watched it probably one or two times. And then that was enough, deleted it, moved on. And yeah, just got cracking.
That's it, because you're not going to get away from everyone saying, oh my God, it was awful, to a point where you go and say, you build it up in your mind saying, like, what was my heel by my ear or something like that. And actually, like you say, your leg's still on. And it was just a shame that obviously it got shown around before the watershed for all the kids at the ground, which was a bit weird. But how important is it on the mental side coming back from this? Because obviously you're doing all your rehab and you've got like a world-class support network in place, as you mentioned. But the mental side of things, and in particular having the confidence in your knee, I still don't particularly sidestep off my right knee, which is probably good for everyone because I was shite at it anyway. But for you, and particularly you always like really good on your footwork, how important is it to have confidence in it?
Yeah, massively. I guess that's sort of back to my point in the sense of, like, I want to be at a point where I'm back to where I was, or if not physically better. Like, I guess the only sort of silver lining around being out for so long is the opportunity to work on yourself physically. You don't really ever get this opportunity, especially, you know, if you're playing quite a bit, to really have sort of 6 to 9 months, whatever it might be, to just really focus on your body and focus on getting physically strong. And I think we're at a stage where, you know, we're almost stronger than, or definitely are stronger and faster than when I last previously played, on my last previous records on strength and speed and things. So yeah, like, it definitely gives you the confidence to see the data and to see, you know, the quad strength, hamstring strength, different things like that. making sure they're symmetrical, and then obviously the rugby stuff as you start to integrate back into training, you know, doing some jackling practice, doing things and realizing, oh yeah, I can do that, and I'm confident to do that, and I want to do it, rather than sort of hesitating, like you say, and sort of, you know, taking away from your game.
Each game for me, I need to get into a ruck and get someone to hit my knee in the first like 2 minutes. So then I'm like, oh yeah, it's fine. And you kind of go with it. Did they use was it a hamstring graft for your reconstruction?
I didn't have a hamstring graft. I had, I guess the details around it, I don't think anyone will kill me for saying, that's my knee, isn't it? So I had my ACL was actually still intact, which was quite surprising.
Oh, wow.
The injury. So I had an MCL reconstruction. I had a tibia plateau fracture, which meant that my tibia got sort of compressed, and they had to do a bone graft and put a plate and a few screws in. And then I had my hamstrings reattached at the distal side, so sort of behind the knee. So I had them reattached as well because they tore off the ligament or the bone. I don't really know what it is. He explained it to me, but I think at the time I was sort of...
As you're going on, you said the ACL was intact, and I was like, oh, that's lucky. And then you keep listing like other stuff that happened, which is way worse.
Yeah, look, it's one of those things, I guess. It was definitely something that I had to take in, especially sort of hoping for the best, but also accepting that it might be something quite bad. And unfortunately, you know, with all that stuff combined, it turns into a pretty serious injury. So, like I said, like, the club have been massive in terms of supporting me to get back to where I am now and get back onto the pitch, hopefully in the not too distant future.
How hard is it? You mentioned before, obviously, when you were celebrating the league and everything, or it wasn't easy to kind of like go out or like fully celebrate because of the injury was pretty fresh at that point. Has it been quite difficult sort of staying connected? I mean, obviously you're still going down training, but do you feel kind of still very much part of the squad, or is that something you've really got to actively work on?
No, I think like I say, the club as a whole, and including the boys, have been really good in terms of, you know, checking in and seeing how I am. And obviously, like, now it's getting closer and closer, and I'm able to be around the boys a bit more in terms of like integrating into some bits of training and trying to get back into some rugby stuff. It's definitely a lot more enjoyable than, you know, the first sort of 3-4 months where you're sort of stuck, like you say, probably in your own bubble and different things. But at the same time, like, coaches and players as a whole were super good with me and checking in, making sure that, you know, everything's going smoothly, and if there's anything that I needed, they'd sort of help out with that stuff.
I'll finish up talking about the injury because you must get like this bored, senseless talking about it. But I'll link it into Sunday's game, because obviously amazing win against Saracens. Cam Henderson sort of running like a demented giraffe over for his try, and obviously he had his own bad injury. Do you take sort of inspiration from that, and also how keen that, like, the goal line defence was the bit that I absolutely loved. How keen was that? Does that make you as a player to want to get like stuck into that again?
Yeah, like, seeing Cam and people like that has been massive for me, just to, you know, because there's always that little doubt in your mind, like, can you sort of get back to where you wanted to be and sort of where you were when you left. And obviously seeing people like him and someone who else has been quite good for me is like Jack Willis. He had a pretty similar injury. He got in touch with me, and it's someone that I've had sort of as like a bit of a, I mean, he's had a lot of questions off me. He probably fucking thinks I'm real annoying bloke or whatever, but no, he's been really helpful. Same with Cam. Just if I had anything on my mind and I didn't really want to speak to the physios about it, I'd just ask them and see where they struggled, or see what things they sort of thought about and what helped them along the way, and sort of took their experience and all the good things that they did, they were able to pass on to me. And now to obviously see, you know, Cam selected for Scotland, Jack selected for England, playing out of their skins, like, it gives me real confidence to know that, you know, one injury is not going to change or define your career. And if you can stay mentally strong and obviously stick to the process, then the outcomes will sort of take care of themselves.
You're obviously in a pretty competitive spot at Tigers anyway. Like, when you get back fit, you've got the Emperor himself, Julian Montoya, as one of the world's best, Captain Argentina, you might as well call him now as well. Like, he is one of the best in the business or in the world at the moment. How good is it? Like, obviously sometimes it might be frustrating when you want to get a start ahead of him, but otherwise, how good is it like working with him every day? And what sort of stuff do you pick up from him?
Yeah, like, really got on with Julian. He's a funny bloke and he's always up for a laugh, but at the same time, you know, when it's time to compete, he competes hard, and obviously it shows on the pitch how much he cares, and that's not just on a Saturday. He cares from Monday through to Sunday, and I think that's what's so good about him, is that he's sort of got both sides, in the sense of he wants to help, but at the same time he wants to compete, and me wanting to naturally compete against him is only going to bring out the best in me. And obviously we got, you know, Charlie, Joe Taufete, and Archie coming through as well. So, like, the position for hooker is quite competitive, and I think that's what makes the club so great in so many different positions as well, is that there's so much depth. You know, you see how many internationals we have away, and the boys that fill in do a great job, and that's because how competitive training is and how much Wiggy is driving that.
At hooker, I think you're in a unique position, because this is a random thing that we have listeners writing in about and randomly debating on the podcast, is basically who in the second row is the best at pushing at the club, because there's all this stuff going on about whether someone's kind of like just in there for show in the second row, people are pushed out. Hooker, you've got the unique ability of, you can feel it on both cheeks. You know, Coley, whenever he says, or Joe Hayes we had on when he spoke about it, he's only getting one side generally. Like, can you shed any light on who's the best pusher?
You know what? I think actually, like, obviously I've sort of started getting back into a few scrums and things, but I'm going to probably say it's a bit of a rogue one. George Martin, when he's in the row, boy can push. Like, he's 120 odd kilos and he's got some, he's had a fair few injuries, but like, it's meant he's worked on his legs physically, and the boy can push. Like, I know he doesn't play it often, but I wouldn't be surprised if he plays it a bit more, because he offers so much around the park, and he can be a genuine second rower. Like, he's big enough, and he pushes hard enough.
The other second rower you've got there is Harry Wells. Competition with you for, I suppose, best mullet in the squad. How's that going? Is that something you're going to be maintaining? Is there a level of competition with that? Do you want to slack him off on here? You can do.
I don't think there's much competition. Yeah, he's definitely second best at that. But yeah, I can't see myself getting rid of it anytime soon. I think if I do, I will have to do some sort of charity event for it. Try to raise some money for something. Not myself, for something that's meaningful. But yeah, like, I don't know. I think it's here to stay for a little bit. And then, yeah, we'll see.
All right, good stuff. Final one. This is going to sound like the end of a job interview. What are sort of your objectives for you personally, do you think, over the next year? What do you want to kind of get back to?
Like, obviously, full fitness is the main one for me. If I can get back fully fit, and I can start making a difference to the squad, whether that's in training, and then hopefully put myself up for selection and sort of making a difference in games. I want to be, you know, someone that's always pushing the squad forward, and not just in my position, but also bringing other people with me and trying to drive standards. So I think, like, from a personal point of view, like, the main thing for me is getting back fully fit, making sure that, like I say, I can repay the club that's, you know, helped me, first of all, get an opportunity when I was in the Championship and, you know, believing in me in that respect, but then also, you know, all the care that they've taken with me throughout this rehab process. It's obviously, personally, I want to get it back out there from a selfish point of view and play as much as I can. But at the same time, like, I want to repay, obviously, you know, the club, the fans, things like that, for always, you know, being so good to me and making sure that this process is as smooth and sort of seamless as possible.
Mate, we were I speak for all fans today and say we're all super excited to see you back. It was you were really on a wicked run of form at the time. I think you also offer something a bit different to, like, you know, when, if you were sort of partnering with Julian, like bringing something completely different off the bench, which is always really good. We're all super excited to hear that you're coming back, mate. And yeah, wish you all the best for the rest of your recovery.
Yeah, appreciate it, mate. Thank you very much.
Right, let's jump onto the ultimate pro era 15, where we had, well, it's probably fair to say, a surprisingly one-sided vote. Well, surprisingly, because I think that they are both excellent players, perhaps unsurprisingly when we sort of look at this in terms of legend status. But we were talking about the blindside flanker position, and it was the winner of the Elliott's Imports versus the Homegrown Heroes champion, as voted for by you, the listener. And it was Hanro Liebenberg against Tom Croft. Comfortable victory in the end, wasn't it?
Yeah, 90% to 10. So thank you, everyone, to who voted.
You've got to say who won.
As I'm just saying, thank you first. And then with 90% to 10%, the winner was Tom Croft. A worthy, two worthy candidates with a very worthy champion. I think we'll, yeah, I think some of these scores I've been a bit surprised by, but they are very close ones. And to be fair, like you said, if everyone has a similar sort of opinion of he's just a bit better, that's how these go, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. I just think, you know, when, as soon as Tom Croft scored that semi-final try against Harlequins, you're like, nah, all-time great right there. That doesn't get erased from anyone's memory anytime soon. So I think that Hanro was always on to a bit of an uphill battle there. But Tom Croft, therefore, first position in the back row. Let's move on to the seven shirt.
Yeah, I think I know who's going to win this one. This is very much an unfair thing, but it's just the way these things fall.
Can we go and put on a little bit of background on this as well? Because I think it would be closer if somebody else had been voted in on the imports 15.
Yes.
Just in case anyone's not listened to previous episodes. So one of the first features we ran was Elliott's Imports. It was cool to say because it was your idea. And it was effectively you had to vote in the best sort of overseas players from outside Great Britain. And we had a fantastic selection for open side. Obviously, Julian Salvi was one, obviously, from Australia. Then we had Shane Jennings. Josh Kronfelt was another. Do we have anyone else? Was it Ben Herring?
Herring, Brendan O'Connor, and I think there might have been one more, I think.
Craig Newby, perhaps, we might have thrown in. But in particular, I thought Shane Jennings and Josh Kronfelt were two very, very big names. I probably leant towards Jennings myself.
I was about to say maybe Kronfeld, but you could have like a fact paper between the two of them. There was very little difference. Instead, Salvi won. And I don't want to disparage Salvi because he was a fantastic player. However, I suspect it may have been a bit closer if it was, say, Kronfeld versus Back, which is a decision that Dean Richards had to make many times when Kronfeld was at the club. And, you know, that is just the reality. Kronfeld was a fantastic player. Backy is a club legend and a fantastic player. Salvi is a fantastic player, and I don't want to disparage him, but I have a sneaky suspicion that this is good. It may have been a bit closer with another opponent.
Yes, I agree. So Julian Salvi was, you know, and look, he won the popular vote, so the worthy winner of the popular vote for imports, but he is against the winner of the popular vote. I don't think we even bothered. We did have a vote, didn't we? It was
because Moody lost twice.
Moody lost again. He was Moody. Can't believe it. Moody against Croft and
Backy.
Yeah, Croft and Backy. That is harsh. But anyway, so it's going to be Neil Back versus Julian Salvi. We'll put the vote out and we'll, I guess, announce the inevitable next week.
Yeah, absolutely. Get involved. It's not often that we ever actually have disagreed for choice. It's just personal opinion on this one. But, and again, we should, I've been serious. Salvi was a fantastic player. And I don't want this to be a bashing exercise, and I don't want it to come across like it is. Salvi was superb for us, and we did miss his presence when he left us. We just have a personal preference of someone else.
Yeah, exactly. But he is also against Neil Back. And I, to be honest, I don't think it really matters who we put up against Backey. I don't think that they'd be in with much of a shot. This is very much, the, I suppose, the appetizer for next week's vote, which will be for the number 8 shirt. And that will be a cracker. Let's look forward then to a trip down to, is it Brentford now? Brentford, yeah. Community Stadium?
Yeah, on the on Kew Bridge, Chiswick.
Actually quite nice, actually. You say it's a good ground as well, lots of good pubs nearby.
Yeah, as an aside, it's a shame it's an 8 o'clock kickoff on a Saturday night, because if this was a normal kickoff time, I would have been all over this one, because it is a lovely ground to go to. And yeah, so if you go, you can go to Kew Bridge. And on Kew Bridge, there's 3 or 4 cracking pubs. And if you go to what we did, is to Chiswick, which is a 15-minute walk, there's a cracking 2 or 3 pubs around Chiswick as well to have a pop at.
Yes. That area of London is very nice anyway, I think. Chiswick, lovely area. Yeah, Chiswick, lovely. Yeah.
And you get to bump into Nick Mullins, who I think lives in the area. So you probably get to Nick bump Mullins, into him.
Nick Mullins and his wine fridge live in the area. Yes, we are, of course, talking about the trip to London Irish. London Irish, who are now one of our playoff rivals, of course. I think they're sat somewhere in the table pretty close to us. I think, are they 5th at the moment?
Yes.
Yeah, 5th. They had a very good win away at the Rec against Bath, who, by all accounts, me to my Bath supporting friends, were absolutely atrocious again. Obviously, you don't know how much of that was put forward by London Irish, but it's a very, very dangerous game, and they're a very, very dangerous team. Again, I think it's one we just want to come away with any sort of win.
Yeah, at the moment, I think we're in need of getting some momentum going. So we need to back up last week with a win. I think we're at knockout rugby stage. And there is an opportunity to start generating that momentum, because this is a very tough trip. However, if you back up last week's home win against Sarries with an away win at Irish, next week we then play Bath at home. So there is a very real opportunity to start putting some wins together. And with 6 games left, 4 at home, 2 away, we probably need to win all of our home games, and we're probably going to need to win one of those 2 away games to give us a chance at top 4. So this is as good an opportunity to get that going by aiming for a win.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's worth saying with London Irish that they don't seem to suffer as much as we do with, I think, the international call-ups. And they still have a very, very dangerous backline. I want to reserve a little bit of a sort of bit of praise for their outside, well, it's usually an inside centre thing, but their outside centre at the weekend, Jansen van Rensburg, who was last season actually as well. He stood up and was just a wonderful all-round player in terms of like being able to manage the defence and create tries and finish tries. And he's doing the same again this season.
Yeah, absolutely. You talk about maybe sort of like a money ball signing. He would be very much one. I would love to see his stats, because I think he scores very, very high pound for pound. You know, against the salary he draws, I bet he is very much value for money, and he's a key part of what they do well.
I think the thing is with London Irish, they used to be kind of like regarded just as a bit of a jouer side. And I suppose one good thing is that I don't think Arundel will be playing for them, which is good, because he always seems to rip us apart whenever he plays. They do, of course, still have guys like Loader. I think they might be missing Hassel Collins. So they are perhaps shorn of some of their big weapons, but you know, in guys like Powell at 9, the Aussie guy, he's very good. Jackson, dickhead, but he is a good fly half. But actually, their pack now is super competitive. If you look at the front row that they had out, you had, I can never say it, Gigenja, Creevy, Hoskins. Then you had Ratuna Urawa and Simmons. Simmons will get yellow carded at some point, as is tradition. But those are some seriously good players. And then they've got, I don't think they will have their under-20s guy, Cunningham South. So I think he will be playing for England under-20s. Hell of a talent, that guy. But it is Tom Pearson at 7 in particular as well is probably the danger man we have to be able to stop. It's a hell of a physical pack, and that's where we need to focus all our attention, in my view.
Yeah, absolutely. And in the first game at home at Welford Road, Steve mentioned it after the game, their ability to score tries from the rolling maul is actually very, very good. You talk about their jouer. Actually, their rolling maul stats are very good, which is why Steve was annoyed why we gave away so many penalties in the midfield that allowed them to boot the ball into our 22 and set up a rolling ball. So these are the sorts of bits of areas where we've got to be on our guard. You know, Creevy is an experienced campaigner. Him versus Montoya, the two Argentinian hookers, is a fantastic battle to look out for. And, you know, the pack for us turned up against Saris and they brought their A game, and that physicality got us over the line. They've got to back it up next week because, you know, you've got to front up to earn the right to score some points.
Are you making any changes to the side for next week?
I think any changes are really going to be dictated to by circumstances, I think, in my opinion. Obviously, the front row stays as it is. Henderson, there's a question mark over if we can get him back from Scotland for the week. That would be amazing, or certainly for the game, if nothing else. That, again, would be amazing because I think that's an area that's going to be, have to be looked at. I think Wells is injured, Callum Green is injured. So having Henderson back would be a big thing for us. And then in the back row, Tommy's going to be away with Wales. So I think the back row will stay as it is. So there is going to be, I think it's more on the bench where it's going to get interesting of who can come in and cover.
I agree. I wonder if we might be seeing perhaps Sean Jansen back on the bench as well. Yeah. Good bit of impact there, but obviously very different player. You know, Tommy really added to the defensive set at the end, didn't he? And he was always sniffing around for a turnover. Perhaps the out-and-out jackaler is something that we will miss, I suspect, against Irish. And it would be a very good game to have an out-and-out jackaler in because you want to be able to try and slow their ball down as much as possible. That said, we did do it in the first half against Saracens after a pretty difficult opening few minutes, but we did it by dominating the contact, and that's what we'll have to do again. I agree. I don't think that we'll make too many changes. If any, we might even break the record for oldest backline again because everyone will be a few days older. I wonder if Guy Porter is fit, if he might come back in. But then the question is, would you bring him in for Scott? Would you bring him in for Gopeth? You know, it's a difficult one to call because they both played so well. Perhaps if, you know, Porter is struggling for fitness, he's been in and out with injury, then it might be one to have him on the bench.
Yeah, his versatility to cover multiple positions makes him an asset to do so there. I think...
No guarantee Watson won't be involved as well, of course, because he wasn't involved in the last matchday squad, was he?
No, absolutely. And I think, you know, last week, Wiggy said we actually caught a couple of injuries during the week. So again, depends if we can go for a week unscathed, that would be quite a nice thing. But yeah, I think, again, selection is going to be dictated to. To me, actually, it's irrespective of who plays. It's an attitude thing, and it's got to be the game plan because we saw it against away at Claremont, and we saw in the first 20 against Saints, and we saw it in the first 40 at the weekend. If we go out with that intensity and that speed of getting over the ball and ruck speed and moving teams around, we are a force to play with when we get going like that.
Big thing again for me is that we need at least one of our tight heads and one of our scrum halves back from England. I think that makes a huge difference, having Hayes and Lenny back with us. It'll be really interesting, in particular about Lenny. I think Joe probably isn't in the top two at the moment. Will Stewart's just come back as well. So you've got Sinclair, Cole and Stewart potentially. So I think we should get Joe Hayes back unless there are injuries. Lenny is a big one. I know he had, I say, a few stinky kicks at the end of the game, but he was sensational. And I think we said, you know, we felt there was that lack of control and experience at nine against Northampton when we had neither of them. And it'll be interesting going away to Cardiff if Steve is prepared to back Mitchell, who was so impressive off the bench, remember, against Italy as well. I mean, JVP had a good game. Mitchell had a very good game off the bench. So on form, you think you might stick with those two. I just wonder if the temptation to have an experienced old campaigner like Lenny in Cardiff might be too much for him to miss out on. So all that considered, I'll take any win, you'll take any win. What is going to be the result?
Oh, who knows? Who knows? The result will be me very nervous, I think. I'll be a nervous watcher. I'd like, if we play like we should do and we do it over 80 minutes, Tigers by four.
I don't think that, I don't think it's going to be much of an easier watch in terms of heart rate. So I think it will be very, very close again. I will go for Tigers by two. Here endeth the podcast for this week. Thank you very much for listening. Hope you've enjoyed it. Hope you found it insightful with Elliot's excellent breakdown of the finances. Elliot, you do this for a day job, so must have been easy as pie for you.
I was about to say, yeah, after 10 years of working in commercial finance, both as a funder and now running my own brokerage, it's probably the closest thing to being an expert I can claim.
You put the fun in funder. I'll give you that.
Oh, look at that.
Didn't even plan that. Very proud of it. Look, if you like what you listen to, please leave us a rating on Apple or Spotify, particularly on Apple. That would be very much appreciated. Otherwise, we will see you all next week.